hassle for motorists, and that's because it alters your normal route that you take, your direct path to destinations that you go to. So any one particular project would be disruptive, and we've all lived with I-69 for years, and hopefully we won't have to live with it much past August, as that is the prescribed deadline. Of course, several years ago, this whole project was supposed to be done, so many of the other projects that the city and the county take on were programmed for funding sources that have a defined time frame that you have to use those funding sources. They've been bid, they've been awarded, and they are now under, you know, some level of either getting ready to start or already started, as is the case for a county project at Country Club Road, which is currently causing the stress on normal traffic patterns. So all of those people who have road projects or are dramatically impacted by changes to road infrastructure work that's going to be coming up this summer, and summer is the time frame that all road work happens because of paving and paving plants being open. We've all been meeting for a couple of months to try to find ways we could mitigate the upcoming challenges for our residents and visitors and employers and employees and everybody that uses our roadway infrastructure. So what we're going to announce today is those plans to mitigate the best we can. It doesn't mean there's not going to be disruption, because there will be. It doesn't mean it's going to be easy to get from necessarily point A to point B, depending on where your points are that you're going, because there will be traffic challenges as a part of this. But what we're trying to do is manage the best we can with collaborative, coordinated effort between the city, the county, the state. We've taken into account the school system and when school lets out or when school returns August 8th, and all of those factors have gone into the plan that we have that we're going to announce jointly with the city and the county, with other members of public safety, the school corporation present today, just as an indicator of there has been thought put into, I think people don't think we think about, how do you mitigate all these things, but that is far from true.
What was the breaking point, Mick? What finally got everybody to the table and said, geez, you know what, enough's enough?
Well, I think there's a supposition that there wasn't ongoing discussion all along. There's always been discussion between city and county public works departments about road infrastructure, and certainly we've had a lot of conversation with the state.
Well, you had to, as many things you got going on.
I think the additional things that were brought into play were knowing that there were going to be some road closures or potential overlaps where there's going to be more difficulty getting to destinations like schools, for example, or public safety officials. You know, the fire response time is a consideration for when you close roads. You want to make sure that should there be a fire, our departments can get to those places without adding a whole lot of time to those routes. And, of course, they reroute as they need to anyway. That's not uncommon to have road closures or other things that happen. So it's really, I guess I would say, the extra effort was made knowing that construction season is upon us, and remembering, too, that weather that you just talked about is a huge variable in a construction project. So some of these projects that are already underway have already been negatively impacted by weather. And so none of these schedules that people see are going to stay the same throughout any project, and that's just natural. Sometimes you dig in the ground and you find something you didn't expect to find, or you bust a water line and you got to stop your project and fix the water line before you finish your project. All those variables are accounted for to some degree in everyone's project, but we're dealing with real-time events that, as those change, we want to make sure the community is updated, so that if a project's either faster than scheduled or slower than scheduled, we're making adjustments in real time to mitigate some of those traffic problems that might occur. Now, I know I've been real general. The purpose of being general at the moment is all the specifics are going to come in the press conference, and then that'll be posted on city and county websites and with regular updates. And we're going to talk about some other additional innovative ways to both communicate and help people find their way around, but I'll save all that for the 10:30 press conference.
Mick, remind people again, because in fairness to the city and the county, there's a couple of things. Number one, you applied for grants to do some of this work, and you have to spend the money or you lose it. That's one point. Another point is, if I-69 wasn't behind schedule 2 years, this work would have gone without this kind of interference. And, you know, people got to remember some of that. You're kind of between a really rock and a hard place.
I want you to, thanks for saying that. That is all accurate. None of us would have been doing all these projects at the same time had it not been because originally I-69 was supposed to be done. So that's right. A factor. And you're right about the funding sources and the timing. You either use it or lose it. And these are millions of dollars in some case. So it's easy for people to say, well, just delay it. Well, you really can't. You get back in line, you might not get the funding at all. And another factor is delaying projects. There's mm-hmm. a cost to that. The contractors already have it in their schedule. So we've analyzed, could we delay some, and what's the cost? Well, if it were $10,000, it'd be one thing. But when it's hundreds of thousands of dollars of taxpayer money, that's another thing. So, you know, all those factors have been weighed into the decisions that we're going to announce jointly today. And some acceleration funding is going to be considered, and you'll hear about that today. Things that would accelerate a project because entities involved in these projects are willing to, you know, pay additional funds to try to make
bonus, baby.
More time. Right, bonus time. That's basically what it is. So all those factors were considered, and you'll hear about those here shortly.
Exciting.
Well, I think anybody that read the paper this week and saw that IU is impacted by the tariffs on steel coming in from countries and what it's going to cost for those extra costs, there's another factor that came into play in this. You use steel in some of these projects, and you know what used to be the price is not going to be the price tomorrow.
Yeah, lots of variables. We're trying to manage the most of the ones we can. Weather, as you all have indicated on a regular basis, is not one anyone's figured out how to manage yet. But it would be unfair to everyone to suggest that weather is not factored into existing schedules. Everyone assumes in their schedule there will be some weather-related delays. It's just if you get an exceptionally wet season and you can't compact the soil to the level it has to be compacted, there's a very prescriptive way that you build a road or improve a road, and if it's too wet to compact it to a certain level, you don't want it to break apart in a year, you gotta wait till it dries out. Those are factors, and that's affected I-69 as well. But
so did not paying their workers.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say that's only one variable. It's not the variable.
That was another. That was another one. Mick Renheisen's our guest this morning. The deputy mayor checks in with us on Thursdays just after 8:30.
Switching gears, Mick. One of the things last week, the Urban Land Institute gave their preliminary report to the city. The final report's coming, but already people are kind of choosing up sides and, hey, we don't want that. We want this. Oh, they're not really going to do that. Kind of give us the timeline, and coming off of the special vehicle for the police department, the city's just not going to let this thing happen without a lot of discussion, right?
Absolutely. This is step one of I don't even know how many.
Yeah.
I guess the first and most salient point to say is this is a conceptual plan. It is not a final plan. So how you saw things drawn in boxes of where this housing product might go and where this office location might go and where this community space might go, that is all just a first blush effort by some really thoughtful, bright people who interviewed 100 of our residents and stakeholders in the community. But it's just the first blush, and it's to get and provoke thought and ideas. It is not going to be the final discussion about what to do with the 24 acres that the city's buying, and it's not to be necessarily reflective of what the final product of it will be built on the site. So the other factor I think is really important to consider, we will not have access to this site for at least 3 years. If the hospital moves as scheduled at the end of 2020, the demolition of the site is going to take the better part of the balance of 2021, because it has to be remediated to certain expectations or soil expectations and compaction and a whole lot of other things. So you're talking about 3 to 4 years before anything else could change on the site. That means a lot of time to discuss all the options that our community would want to consider having on the site. And I think that's the most important thing. There is no imminent decision, and this is by far the very beginning stage of this. We should get a final extensive written report from the ULI panelists in mid-June, so about 8 weeks, I believe, is their schedule. And at that point, we'll announce the next round of things that we'll have to discuss options for the site, remembering that we'll still have 3 years after mid-June for plenty of public engagement and discussion, and we expect to have that in a lot of forms. We have not figured out what all those are yet. My past history in parks, I hope we use some of the ways that we consider, and I think we will consider some of those ways, which could be electronic. We'll put the master plan up as it is today and let people comment on it. We'll have some, maybe consider some sort of a steering group that kind of helps lead us and keep us on some sort of a regular path of communicating with the public. We'll use our new public engagement director to get out and share the plans that as they exist today and get feedback from a variety of groups. So, you know, lots of things we anticipate doing. We just don't have a roadmap for what that's going to be yet because we just got the first blush plan, the first step from the ULI folks.
Seems to be some blowback on the control issue of what you can and can't do with the property. The two angles here. Why not pay full freight or negotiate and buy that with the option to let anybody go in there? Why did you take the discounted deal instead with that hanging over it, so to speak?
Are you talking about the potential competitor?
Yes, absolutely. Sorry about the poorly formulated question.
Okay, no, I just wanted to make sure I understood the question.
Yeah, so they said $16 million. You say, well, you tear it down and do all this. We're going to buy it for $6.5 million, but there's a clause in there that says you can't let anybody else in the healthcare field get in. Would they have sold it to you for full freight and all that, and then you could put anybody in there? Was that not worth doing? Maybe that's a better way of asking it.
Okay. So actually, as I unpack that, it's important to note that as we were finishing the final purchase agreement, that comment was added to the purchase agreement language. So there's a clause in there now that allows IU Health to consider allowing a potential healthcare provider on the site, but they have final approval. So that wasn't in the agreement until some of the public discussion came out about that. So that's a good thing, right? That means we were still in negotiation, we still had an opportunity to do that. But I don't think it's unusual for anybody to want to protect sort of their area. I mean, whether you like that idea or not, and whether that's a not-for-profit like Volunteers in Medicine or something, you know, I don't want to speak for IU Health, but I would think they would be more receptive to an entity much like that that's not really a competitor than they would Methodist Hospital coming in and wanting to build on their old site. Those non-competes, if you will, are kind of common in the corporate world, and whether you like or don't like that option, at least in this case, IU Health has shown a willingness to at least let us suggest if there is a potential health care use of the site that they would have some ability to consider that, but they also have the right to refuse that.
Mick, so people don't lose sight of what this included. One of the things that I thought was salient was that the city and the county need to talk about land use rules and who determines what can be built where and what color something is and all that. That, you know, we've got to come together on all of these rules that we have and all of these commissions that have to rule on whatever is going to be done.
That's a great comment, Keith. I think, in fact, we just had a discussion with a county commissioner, Julie Thomas, and the county planning director and the city planning director and the mayor, and I sat down just this week and talked a lot about the fact that we're both in the process of doing major updates to our respective zoning codes. Ours is called the Unified Development Ordinance, and for the moment I've forgotten. I think theirs is a Comprehensive Development Ordinance, CDO. Ours is UDO. And because those are going on sort of in parallel track, there is an opportunity, and we've started that discussion, to see if there's ways to use common nomenclature so that anybody who's a developer looks at maps the city has or the county has in terms of zoning and says, oh, okay, that means the same thing in the county as it does in the city. So we're actually going to have our respective consultants have some discussions through the process, and of course city and county staff and elected officials will talk about that too in a collaborative effort to try to make that a little bit more seamless. Perfect timing for a discussion about things like the hospital, where the zoning is obviously going to change. It doesn't have to change today, but it will be reflected as a change in our UDO moving forward about how what is now mostly medical use around the site, what could that be, what should that be, once IU Health moves to the east side of our community.
Do you have any trivia for us in the bicentennial categories?
I have trivia for you in the bicentennial category.
Outstanding. We need to learn. We need to learn about this wonderful community.
You do. This one is related to an IU alum who is a regular fixture on the Forbes magazine's list of world's richest people.
Mark Cuban.
Well, now, that was the answer, but let's listen to the other
people. There's more?
We got choices.
We have choices.
Well, I think sometimes people don't realize, you know, the stature of some of the IU alums that are out there, or maybe don't even know the people they see on a regular basis in places like the media, happen to be IU alums. So this one doesn't even include one I was just thinking of. So here are some famous people who you might consider also fairly wealthy. The answer is Mark Cuban, thank you very much, Glass. But Joshua Bell.
Yeah, violinist.
Very famous IU alum, violinist. Tavis Smiley.
Yep.
Yeah.
And Jane Pauley. Most people don't recall, unless you've been around. Keith, you know, you would have known Jane Pauley very
NBC.
Well. Yep. And I just thought of
Brian Gumbel and Jane Pauley were on the morning show for
I would have put this on as well, because but she's a young, still young professional making her way very successfully, I think, at ESPN.
Sage Steele.
So lots of broadcasters and artists and...
And more to come.
Hey, don't forget
Sylvia
McNair.
Kevin Kline and Sylvia McNair.
Yeah.
There's,
tons of IU alums.
Tons of people out there.
But Mark Cuban is.
But Mark's
is,
on top
of Forbes magazine. He is on the list, and these other people aren't.
Yeah, and you could add up all the other people and add them up all again and probably times them by 10, and we still wouldn't catch Mark's. Broadcast.com, that's where Mr. Cuban made his. I think that's what the B, isn't it, Mick?
Yes.
Billions. Billion. Give or take. Now we're talking about some real money.
Plural.
Yeah. He's doing all right. Doing all right. As the Dallas Mavericks, as we know, in the Cuban Center, a very generous donation as well for Indiana University. Great job as always, Mick. We're looking forward to this press conference today. I think that's what that's going to hopefully give people a deep breath and say, all right, good. We're moving in the right direction, and we'll hear all about it next Thursday morning.
Yep. And while I'll say that the press conference will, I think, help. To some degree, I'm going to urge everyone to be patient as the summer construction season happens, because it will still be disruptive to your normal traffic patterns.
But the concerns are being heard, and something is trying to be done. I think that's the key. People want to know why. And if you tell them why, they sometimes understand a little bit better, just like we do. Hey, great job as always. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.